Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Connect. And we're going to show you today some of the Interactions SDK. So 2 years ago, we stood on this very stage and we showed you the beta version of the Connect for Windows SDK. Anyone from the audience here 2 years ago? Couple. Actually, quite a few. Very cool. So since then, we've had a few changes. They went from beta and they released a version very, very quickly, which is, you know, quite a different thing for Microsoft to do. Since then, they've released a couple of different upgrades. And currently, we're sitting on version 1.7. And what's new in that a lot of you will be interested in, is the new interaction stream. And that's what we're going to show you today. But before you get too comfortable, many of you might know a few doctors, some nurses, maybe some microbiologists. And they work in, you know, what most of us would call a clean environment. Problem with this sort of environment is I might come over and I look at my x-ray. Then I need to go touch my patient. So I work on him for a bit. Then I might have to go and enter some results about the thing I've just examined. So I have to take my gloves off again, go back to the computer. Then I might go back to my patient, back to the samples, back to the x-ray, many, many times over. So the problem with that is, like, these are really, really uncomfortable and hard to put on. But it takes a lot of time. It's also cumbersome, and a lot of the times in some environments, people might get to the point that they get so sick of putting the gloves on and off that they don't bother wearing them at all. Now, this is a problem. Sometimes you end up with extra staff because you need someone to drive the computer for you while you're working on the patient because you don't want to have to go in and out and scrub in multiple times. So I just want to show you now a demo that I think that Connect is really perfect for. So what the Connect allows me to do now is I could look through my patient's x-rays. I can have a look at his shoulder. I can move across and look at the one of his head. Then I can come back and talk to my patient. I can interact with him. And because I haven't actually touched anything else, I don't have to take my gloves off again. Problem is now I still have to be able to enter results into the computer. And the good thing is that the Connect has a speech recognition. So if I did Connect start assessment, the patient appears to have a normal size head. Connect completed. Now what I just did was I can take notes about the actual assessment and come back to it later, or someone can pick it up and enter that into a computer and cut down lots and lots of time. Now that's just one example of what Connect can be useful. I've seen it being used for things in retail, in health, in automotive, and the guys down the front here have been telling me they've been using it in the Navy. So today we're going to be talking all about interactions. First, we're going to start off, I'm going to explain what the different interaction zones are. Then we're going to touch briefly a little bit on machine learning. I'm going to show you the new Interactions Control Gallery. And then we're going to finish off by having a bit more of an in-depth look at the interaction stream. So interaction zones. Now, every day we interact with things and people. We change our behavior, we change what we do, how we interact, without even thinking about it. Now, the best way I think I can demonstrate this is to do an actual demonstration. So for this, I need a very brave volunteer. Anyone want to volunteer? Yes, please come up. And I'm going to get John to be my guinea pig. So if you come down this way, sorry. Anyone over there that can't quite see, you might want to just shift over for this one. So what was your name, sorry?
Ruben.
Hi, Ruben. So what Ruben's going to do is we're going to do a few different run-throughs. What Ruben's going to do is he's going to direct John around this chair without tripping him over. I'm going to be the extra safety person so he doesn't like run into the speakers and stuff like that. And I'm going to give you some different parameters to work with. And we'll do this a couple of times. So there's no wrong answer, but we're going to see how we're going to go. So the first one that we're going to do, I'm going to step really quite close to John. He's not going to bite you. Now, using whatever means that you think is appropriate at the moment, what I want you to do is direct John around the chair.
Turn left. Take two steps forward. One step. Turn left again. Take four steps forward. Turn left. Take one step forward. Turn right.
Very good. Thank you, Ruben. That was really good. No, come back. Don't run away. John, can you come back here for a second? So what we saw Ruben do was he used a bunch of voice commands to direct John around the chair. So now I'm going to make it a little bit more difficult. So now John can't see you. Hopefully his head's small enough to get this on. Sorry. And John can't hear you. I think I got your ears. Okay, and hopefully you can breathe long enough. So now, step quite close. Yep, if you can direct John around the chair. Awesome. So we'll take this off John first. As you can see, Ruben, what he did was he adapted to his environment and the tasks that I needed to do, and he used touch to move John around. Now I want to do one more at this distance. I want you to take John around again, but I want you to try and do it faster than you did the first time.
Walk around the chair.
Nice. So that was when you were up nice and close, if we can get John to come back. So John's standing there, so we're going to take a step back so that we can't actually reach John anymore. And I won't let you cheat and tell him he can just walk around the chair, but how would you direct John now?
Same way I did the first time.
Same way I did the first time? So you'd still use the voice? What if you couldn't speak and John couldn't hear you? Oh, he can face you if it makes it easier. Nice. So see here, now he's used some different gestures. Now if we take you to the end of the room, if we come all the way over there, and John might have to move to the side a little bit now. Oh, no, that's probably good. He can still see you. How would you direct him now? Nice. Now, I just want to point out there, he used the same mechanism, but do you notice that the gestures got a lot bigger? Thank you, Ruben. You can sit down now. I think everyone, he needs a really good round of applause. He got John around there very safely. Flip the slide for me. So why did I just show you that? Now we get to reveal the chair. What we're talking about here is different interaction zones. So when Ruben was right up close to John, that's what we call the tactile range, up to 40 centimeters from the computer. So at that point, this is where we use the keyboard, this is where we use the mouse, this is where if it was a touch screen, we can touch the screen. At this distance, it's really only viable to have one person doing something generally. And at this distance, the Kinect cannot see you. So this is tactile. Take the step back where we can't reach anymore. So at the moment, we're now in the near zone. Now, if we think about the different things Ruben did, when he was near, he used touch to get John around and his voice commands. Once he got to here, He could use voice and he could use small interactions. So his small gestures to get him around the chair. So at this distance and near, you can have 1 to 2 people from the Kinect. And then you can also use gestures and voice. Go a little bit back further, 2 to 4 meters from the Kinect. It can see up to 6 people at this distance. Again, you would use gestures. I was a little bit exaggerated when I put Ruben right at the back of the room, but did you notice that the gestures were much bigger to help John see at that distance? Now, once you get over 4 meters, right at the out of range area where the Kinect can no longer see you, you can use voice, but it gets a lot less reliable because you're going to have things like background noise in the road. Now, the important thing to think about when you're deciding which thing to use, do you use the keyboard? Do you use the mouse? Do you use something like a Leap Motion? Or do you use a Kinect? How you decide what you want to do with these is to think about the task that you want to perform. You want to think about the accuracy that you require, and you want to think about the outcome that you need. So if it's something like speed, he tended to grab John and move him around. If it's about accuracy, you might hold him, you might direct him very slowly, you may slow down or speed up your speech. It's all about matching those things up, or otherwise your app doesn't work. So everyone can see me now. I can give you a very good example of a situation I can think of where someone used completely the wrong technology. So about a year ago, I was sitting in the doctor's office, waiting to go in and get an appointment. Over here, there's little Billy. He doesn't sound very well. He's sniffling. He's got this, bit of goo running down his nose. It's obviously been annoying him, like the big snail trail down his sleeve. And then you've got Rob over here. He's sitting there. He's got the smoker's cough. He's barfing up a lung. And then on the far right, you've got Sally. She's obviously got a bit of cold, reading The Woman's Day, sneezing into it. Disgusting environment. Then I kind of look over, and I notice there's this beautiful kiosk. Really well set up, height adjusted to sort of ergonomically, normal sort of person height. Has lots of nice branding on it. It's got a nice little traction screen to get people to come over it. It's entitled, 5 ways to stop the spread of germs. So I'm sitting there looking around. It's kind of interesting. Then, little Billy, he gets up from playing at his mum's feet, walks over the screen, starts tapping away at it. I'm guessing he can't read, but looks like, things like cover your mouth when you cough, wash your hands. Then, that little bit of goo, it starts to get annoying, and he does like that. It's like, for me, number one, do not touch this screen. So there, the solution really didn't suit the environment. You're there, you don't want to spread germs, and the first thing they're doing is using a touchscreen. So think about how people react in the environment before you choose your solution. So 2 years ago when we were here, one of the really cool things that we all wanted to do was make some gestures, because it didn't exist at all for you. Anyone make any gestures? Anyone tried? No. Why did no one try? I can tell you why I got sick of trying. It's really, really hard. At the start, it's easy to do sort of a pose, like you might want to do arm out to the left to make the screen move. But to make that useful for every person that's possibly going to use your system is really hard. We had a really good example of it. We built a little demo, and we wanted to have arms right out to zoom out a map. It worked really great on all the people we tested it on. John's 6'4". We brought a little 8-year-old came to play with our system. Didn't work for her. She had little tiny arms, not 6'4" arms. So the reason is now that they've got the interaction stream. So what they've gone and done is Microsoft Research has spent a bunch of time coming up with a couple of different interaction gestures to help you. So they've taken the depth stream, the skeleton stream, and provided a new stream called the interaction stream. With that, they've set up a platform for you. So they've created a bunch of controls to go with it. So at the top level is the easy level. They've got a bunch of WPF controls that are really easy for you to use and drop into your application. The next level down, you can use the interaction stream and the controls that they made to extend your own controls to make connectified controls. Then we have the next level, which is the pure interaction stream, where you need to build something that they don't have already for you. And then if that's not enough, that's when you get to build your own gestures again. And to get this really accurate for everyone, I think the best way you want to go about it is to do something like machine learning. So machine learning is really hard. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of data. So what I'm going to do is we're going to take you through a couple of demos to show you how Microsoft went about this for the ones that they've created. So they created a couple of interactions. They created one which is a push, and they created one which is a grab. So the first thing they do when they go out to build one of these things is they have to collect loads and loads of data. So what they did was they set up a project so that they could capture people doing these different interactions. And what they needed to do was be able to identify their hands. So John's just going to run up an example. So what we're doing here is what we've done is we've used the skeleton stream to identify where my hand is. And then we've used the depth frame to grab out some pixels around where my hand is to put it on the other side of the screen. So this is essentially how they started. And as you can see, as I sort of close my hand, you'll see the depth change, the colors in my hand on that frame. So what they would do is they would get someone to do different grips. Because if everyone holds their hand up and does a grip, I'm assuming a lot of people do it very differently. So, you know, you can grip from here, you can sort of like do the whole half hand grip. Some people sort of like don't actually close their hands because they've got really long fingernails. So they took a bunch of this sort of reaction. And the other thing that they did, if you watch my hand there, is there's a bit of flicker. They had to do some image stabilization as part of it. So they took all this data. And what they did was they sat down and manually tagged every frame to work out when someone was gripping and when someone wasn't gripping. Then they ran it through a bunch of algorithms. So I'm not a machine learning expert. Allison from Microsoft Research, he did a really good build video on this. So if you're interested in on the actual details of how they do their algorithms, a lot of that is there's in a build video that I've got at the end of the presentation that you can have a look at. So they ran it through their data until they got it pretty good. They thought they were pretty good at identifying a group. So then they sort of sent the beta out for people to test a little bit further out around the world. And what they did was they found that they didn't have enough data. They had to come back and get like four times as much data before they were pretty happy with it to release it in what is currently the 1.7 SDK. So the really important step that they did there was verification. And I can tell you why verification is really, really important. There was a neural networks project back in the 80s for the Defense Department in the Pentagon. And what they wanted to be able to do, the challenge was to be able to identify a tank from the forest automatically. So what they did, they went out, they took 200 sample photos, 100 of trees, 100 of them with tanks. They took half of them and stuck them in a vault as their special verification data. Then they started sticking, so you know, they scanned all the photos in. This is back in the 80s, there's no digital cameras. They fed it through their neural network. It randomly got things wrong, because it's a neural network. And over a process of time, they built it up to the point that it was perfect. It would get it right every single time, which is really cool. So the scientists, you know, they're a bit, have we actually taught it to recognize a tank from a tree? So they go to the vault, they get their other set of photos out, they feed it through the machine, What do you think happens? It gets it right every time. Awesome. Demo to the Pentagon, all happy, signs over, takes their like couple of billion dollars. Gives them the sample data as well. So what do? They feed it through a new lot of data. Guess what happens? The bunny gets it. So they'll be confused, so they got their sample data back. Ran it through, perfect. Ran it through here, bunny dies every time. What happened was, when someone had a good look at the photos, they noticed that out of the photos, the 100 taken of the forest were taken on a cloudy day, and the 100 taken of the tanks were all on a sunny day. So pretty much the Pentagon bought themselves a multi-billion dollar light detector. This is why verification is very, very important. Who's played on the Xbox 360 with the Kinect? Yeah. Hold your hand up for 2 seconds if you've used one of the games where you have to hold your hand up to like go over thing. How do you guys find that?
Sucks?
Painful?
Gorilla arms.
Sorry?
Gorilla arms.
You get gorilla arms, yeah. So the good thing about that method is that it's really quick to learn. Everyone can do this, right? The problem is you can't get... Like, after you get it, you still have to hold the hand there for 2 seconds. So what they did recently for the interaction SDK, they've gone away from that hold and hope sort of method, and they've gone for this push effect. Now, it's a lot harder to master, like, originally, but once you get it, you get really, really quick. And so we're going to show you a bit of a demo to prove how quick that you can get with the push method. So for this, I need 2 volunteers. You guys are going to have a race. First, I need a left-hander. Any left-handers? No left-handers. Come on. Come on. Thank you. So what's your name?
Marcus.
Hi, Marcus. Come up. So what I'm going to get Marcus to do, I have to set him up first. So you're going to do the push one. We're just going to get you set up on the thing. Yep. So you got to just get you to hold your hand up. You can use either hand. And then once you put your hand up and it detects you need to keep your hand up until the whole game is over.
Okay.
So you're going to be the person on the right-hand side with the purple ones. So you get to do a push to select them. So the aim of the game is to select all 9 as fast as you can. Don't cheat yet.
Sorry.
Yeah. So we've got Marcus. Now I need a right-hander. Yep.
Pull that off. So the way it's programmed is if you drop your hand, so that's why you've got to keep your hand up.
Okay.
So
okay.
You should be the one.
And what's your name?
Nathan.
Hi, Nathan. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So you're going to be the person on the left-hand side, and you can only use your right hand because this is one we had to kind of program ourselves, and we only did for one hand. So when John resets it, as fast as you can, you have to clear all 9 buttons. And I'm just going to get off the stage out of the room.
Sorry.
So you guys ready?
Hang on, that's your hand.
So you have to...
No. So what we're going to do is just drop your hand and keep your hand.
Put your hand up.
Player one just needs to be... So you've just got to be the green.
You've got to be green.
And you can introduce your right hand and you'll stay red. So you've got to make sure both your hands are always up.
Yeah, and don't take your hands down until the end, until you both are finished. Okay. So you ready?
Count down.
Yep. 3, 2, 1. Keep your hand up, Yep, keep going.
Can I push his buttons?
No, you can't. Well, you probably could, but, you know. Awesome. So, if we have a look at the graph here, you guys can put your hands down now. You'll have a second round, see if you can redeem yourself, yeah? What you can see is the graph is kind of, he picks up speed as he goes along, as he gets better at the push. And poor old Nathan here, his graph's pretty consistent. Like, it's only so fast he can go because he has to wait 2 seconds. Do you reckon you guys can do it quicker?
doing push.
Yeah. And try.
You want to have another go? See if you can get the graphs closer. See what...
So he had a disadvantage to do that. He had to wait 2 seconds.
Yeah, so the old method, right, with the Xbox 360, you had to, like, hold and it would do the spinny thing. Yeah.
Do you want to switch?
You can switch, but you have to use your right hand.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay?
You have to go left anyway.
You can do whatever you want, but he has to use his right hand because...
No, I can do what I can. So just need to just put your hand down for a second. Raise your... Yeah, and then you put yours up. Fantastic. You ready? 3, 2, 1...
You just gotta hold it, yep.
Yeah.
Now keep your hand up. This one. Similar graphs, right? Like you got quicker, yours. Yeah, you got to a certain point and it kept going. So which one did you guys prefer?
The first one, for sure.
Yeah, the one I
the
just
push?
Did.
Push,
yeah. Yeah, the push, definitely.
Cool. Thank you very much, guys. You can take your seats. Thank you very much for helping. So that's what they built with the push. I just want to point out a couple of things with the push, if you just reset it for me. You'll notice that there's this little hand icon, and the kind of cool thing about it is if I switch my hands, the icon changes to actually show you which hand you actually have up to decide which is your primary. You may have noticed that it gets a bit of an effect as I go to push on it. They've spent a lot of time on this to give you an indication that, you know, you're actually pushing in and that, you know, you can take your hand back again. So as the hand fills up, I'm about to push the button, and then it goes blue when the button's pushed. So what's new in 1.7 is this whole concept of interactions gallery. So when you download the SDK, you download the samples, go check out the interactions gallery because it has a lot of all the controls I'm going to show you next in it. But first, I'm going to show you how to use them. So, yes?
The dumb question, why is it laterally inverted?
Laterally inverted, is it that it's reflected on the screen? Is it backwards?
You're talking about when you see your skeleton, it's inverted.
Oh, skeleton.
Because you're watching your
mirror. Yeah, you're watching your mirror. Did anyone, has anyone used the SDK themselves? Couple, cool. So what most of us went and did with the first lot of SDK was we had to have a way to show people where they were, that the Kinect had seen them, what they were doing with the Kinect. So I found a few examples from the web on this. So the top left one there, that's one that we built. So it's a little Silverlight app, shows you all the different joints, and you can see yourself moving, two players. The one down the bottom there, you've got the little Joe Anonymous stick figure. And then the paint one here, you've got this little, like, the shadow outline of the person. That's cool. It doesn't take a lot of code to do this, but the problem is everyone had to go and pretty much do the same thing. And as you can see, it isn't very consistent. So what they've gone and done is they've made a couple of controls to help us out with this. So the first lot we're going to look at is we're going to look at, out of the four levels, we're going to look at the WPF ones that are simple, out-of-the-box ones, and then I'm going to show you how to extend an existing WPF control to make it connectable. So what I've done here, I've hooked it up with, so this is a WPF example in C#. I've also hooked it up to Caliber and Micro to help me with the view model binding as well. Now before John opens the first app, I just want to point out a couple of things with the solution that are really important. So you may notice that there's two little files there that you can see, one called the Kinect Interactions with a 32 and one with a 64 on the end. To use the interaction stuff, you actually have to add these to your project as a referenced file and have it a content file to copy it. Otherwise, it looks really good until you go use it, and then you just get this really random error. So you always need to include these in your project when you're using the interaction stream. So if we just open up the shell view, so what we've done is we've set up a little grid, and we've used a couple of different controls. So the first one that you can see there is we've used the connect sensor to user UI control. Now what that does is it hooks up with the sensor, you hook it to the sensor, and it will tell you, it'll go have a spinny donut for when it's initializing, it'll pop up with the connect when it's initialized and then disappear. If there's an error, it'll pop up with a big exclamation mark. And if you use the microphone, you may have noticed in the first demo, it goes this little blue microphone as well. So that one's really simple to use. Pretty much you drop it on your page and hook it up to your sensor code, and it just automatically works. The other one there is the Connect User Viewer. Now that one's going to help us with letting the user know where they are, who's the primary and who's the secondary. So usually a lot of Connect applications, you only want one person using it at a time. This helps you to tell. So when you saw with the two guys before, one of them was red, one of them was green. And then we have another control called the, John scrolls down a bit, we have the Connect Region. This is pretty much the heart of using the different controls. So it fires a bunch of events to tell you what a person is doing, and the controls inside it hook up to its events. So if you just run the shell for a second, I'll point some of them out. So up in the top corner here, that's the little user viewer control. And if John just pops into the screen for a second. No. You see there's two of us, and whoever puts their hand up first and sort of holds control, they go green, they become the primary. So it doesn't matter while he's holding his hand up, it doesn't matter what I do, except I took it because he took his hand down. I can go as crazy as I want, but I can be in front of him, and it still takes him as the primary user, which is something that a lot of us come across with, you know, people interrupting the other stream. So if I just get you to move the user viewer down into the middle just so we can see it a bit bigger for a second. In the grid. Change the grid location of the user viewer.
Oh, make it bigger.
Yep. Yep.
Oh.
So if you just put it on row one and column one. Oh, actually, you probably want to do column span two.
Can we just set a width and height on this guy?
That's the sensor chooser.
Oh, shocker. Sorry.
Yes, you can make him bigger. Oh. So you can make him a lot bigger. You can make him like 500 or something. And you'll notice there that we've overridden the primary user color and the default user color. So I've set them just randomly to dark cyan and crimson. So what's your favorite color?
Yellow.
So can we set one of them to yellow, John? And another color from you?
Magenta.
So now that I'm primary, I'm yellow. And then when I stop putting my hands down, I go pink, but he's kind of put it behind the buttons. Yeah, it's gonna be better. Yeah, I'm a lot bigger now. So you can make that as big or small as you want, depending on what your application is. So if you wanna overlay something over the top, you can still have this in the background, or if you just want it like I had in the top little left-hand corner, just to give that user an indication so that they know that they're in the right view, that, you know, once I get to like over here, I'm no longer in the picture and I've been cut off. It helps them center themselves within your app to give you more accurate results.
Can you overload the painting of that picture so that you can smooth out some of the edges and remove some of the noise?
Not using that control, but you could do your own, right? So, that, with that one, it's like drop and forget it. This is the one for someone who doesn't know anything about Connect, or, you know, you just want to use it anyway. You just drop it on and off you go. You can change the color, you can change the size. That's pretty much it with this one. So if you want to run up the demo again for a second. So the first control I want to show you is the button one. So there's two types of buttons that they've provided you with. The one I'm going to show you now is the Connect Tile button. Did you comment the code out? You need to go to the button view, button demo view. So to get a button on the screen, that's all you have to type. The other thing I've done is I've put it inside that Connect region that we saw because I'm injecting this view inside that Connect region. But to get the button on the screen, this is all you have to do. So this button probably looks a bit familiar from our little push demo, but this is what it looks like by default. It's just a purple button, and you can get the press. You can see it press. That's all it does. We can do other things to it. So there's a couple of properties. So the main ones are the label and the content. So it has the two different sections. But if you want, you can customize that button to be whatever you want. So that X-ray demo I showed you at the beginning, I'd overridden it to put an image in there, make the image big. I'd set the background to black. You can make it look however you want. So we're just going to set the text and the content. And what I've done is I've bound to the click event, and I'm just going to set some text on the screen so I know I've pressed it. So I've got hello and press me, and when I press it, I get clicked. So that's really, really simple. Anyone can do that. Don't need to know anything about Connect. But what if you don't? What if you want more than a button? What if you want to put, say, a checkbox on the screen? So we just run it up first. The first one I'm going to show you is just a normal checkbox. So we're going to put the checkbox on the screen and show you what happens by default. I've changed the style a bit to make it a little bit bigger, to be a bit more sort of like hit test friendly, because normally they're like super tiny. So now that I've got the checkbox up, you know, I hover over, but I can't do anything to it. It doesn't work. So how do we make a checkbox connectable? So the way to do this is we need to inherit from checkbox and add a few methods. So we're just going to show you that one now. Up in controls, connectable checkbox. So we have a connectable checkbox. We inherit from checkbox. In our initialize event, what we do is we hook up. There's a bunch of different events that the Connect region fires. So we just hook up to a bunch of them. So we hook up to the press, the capture, the release, the enter handle, the exit handle. And we add our own methods to that and decide what to do with it for our particular control. So the first ones for the leave and the enter, we're just going to trigger the visual states on and off. So for mouse over and normal. Then for the pointer, we're going to make sure we have a... So there's a part of the Connect thing is a little hand that you saw. We're going to hook up to that and make sure we have a reference to the hand pointer control. And For the hand pressed, what we do in this one is where we get an event. So what happens there is there's a few different properties that a hand has. So we can tell that it is the if it's the primary user, so if it's that first person who was read, and then we can tell if it's their primary hand. So that was like the one that's up in the air, and that switches, right? So it'll tell you if it's left or right, but you also want to know if I want to track this one or if I'm tracking this one here. So we're going to do for the primary user and their primary hand, so the one that they've got up waving first. When they're doing that, we're going to capture the hand and tell it that we've handled that particular event. And the important one is for the release. So after you've pushed in and release, what we're going to do then is we're going to flip the mode of the checkbox. And we also set the visual state as well, so you know that you're over it and off of it. So the checkbox looks really, really similar. But this time, when I hover over it and click on it, it's checked. And then I can do it again. And it's, didn't work that time. Oh, it just was a little bit delayed. So that's how you can extend existing WPF controls to make them connectable if you want more than just the buttons. So before, when I talked about the grip, where that comes into play is when we want to do something with the scroll viewer. So this is where we need to manipulate. We're not just interacting, we're not just pressing, we need to manipulate something. So this is useful when you have a list of things that the person needs to get through. So what that allows you to do is to close your hand . It usually lets me close my hand. And allows me to manipulate the list. So, and the other thing it does is it has a little bit of physics to it. So if I flick it, it keeps going. So you can close, move, and then you can then use the press to select. So if I just quickly show you how you do that. This one's quite simple as well. So here we just use a Kinect scroll viewer, and we're just setting it to make it massively green. So the thing I've overridden here is I've overridden the hover background so that when I'm hovering it, it's used to that massive green. You can make that whatever you want. It's good to let the person know that they're in the right area with their hand. And then inside of it, all I've done is I've set an items control, and we've just whacked on a bunch of the buttons that you just saw. So it allows you to move through bunches of items quite quickly. So that wasn't much code, was it? No? So the question is the swipe part of vision learning, or is it baked in?
Yeah.
Yep. So there's the grab, and once you grip, it tracks the motion, so it tracks the XY changes, and then it knows the acceleration, and then once you let go, it just sort of keeps going. And you can stop it by grabbing again as well. So it is it's baked into the control of the scroll viewer. Another question? So that there, we showed the first two simple ones. So that's the Kinect for Windows controls that I just showed you there. When you have a WPF application and you want to really do basic interactions controls for a really simple application, you can use those Kinect buttons in the Kinect scroll viewer. If you then want to, still doing WPF, extend that, you can extend the Kinect region and make your own checkboxes and whatever controls you want to use. So that was the Kinectified checkbox. So the next level of difficulty is, if we move to the, is the interaction stream itself. This is where you can still use it in a WPF application where you want to do more than what is available in those controls. But it also can be used when you don't have a WPF application. So if you've got a console application and you want to still use gestures and things like that, this is where you can use the interaction stream. The way you use the interaction stream is a bit different to how you would normally use your other streams. So normally with a stream, you would enable it and set its parameters. So you might want to set the depth to a particular resolution. You hook up its ready event and you start the sensor and off you go, and that's all you do. The interaction stream breaks that rule slightly, so it's a little bit different. So the three steps to the interaction stream, you have to hook to the depth ready event and you have to call a method called process depth. You have to hook to the skeleton frame ready event and call a method called process skeleton. Then in your interaction frame ready event, this is where you do all your work, but you have to have done those other two steps first. And if you don't, nothing gets fired in your interaction stream. So it's just one little thing that's a little bit different to the others to be aware of when you're first doing it. So what this demo will do is when I run it up, I'm just going to hook up to the stream and we're going to capture some events and we'll play with it a bit. So the basic stream itself here, all we're doing is we're just putting on an items controller and we're adding text to it and it just scrolls down the page. So that the WPF side of it is really nothing to worry about. So if we look at the code for the actual shell, so I'm doing it in the shell so I can control it where the sensor is, and then I'm going to bubble it up to my actual particular user control. So this is all the normal sensor code that you'd write to handle when the sensor changes, but this one that is down here is this is the new stuff that you have to do. Just for simplicity's sake, I'm going to have just a private variable. I'm going to hold a skeleton array and a users array. Then, like we would normally do with the depth frame or the skeleton frame, I'm going to create an interaction stream and tell it where my sensor is and hook up to the interaction stream ready event. But because we need those other events as well, I'm going to hook up to the depth and the skeleton frame ready event. These are the extra steps we need. So if we scroll down to our depth, there's a bunch of code there. The really important line is just the process depth. This is part of the SDK, so it's not something you have to write yourself. You just have to call this method, and you give it the raw pixel data from the depth frame, and you give it the timestamp. That's your depth. That's first step. Second step is the skeleton. Again, bunch of code, but the really important line is calling the process skeleton. So what we do is we copy the skeleton data into our skeleton array, so we have a copy of it. We get the reading from the accelerometer on the connect, and then we call process skeleton, giving it our skeleton array, the accelerometer, and the time. So those two bits of information it needs to then use in its interaction frame ready. So then step three is your interaction frame ready event. This is where you can write whatever code you want to do. But for today, what I'm going to do here, the example I've just got at the moment, is what we're doing is we're going through the list of users, and we're finding the user's hand, where the hand is the right hand, and when they've gripped, we're just going to publish an event saying the right hand's gripped, and that appears on the screen. We'll show you that one first. So as it detects, it's not detecting very well today. As it detects them, it'll come up on the screen with right grip. So that's just one example. But if we go through it and have a look at the breakpoint, first I'll show you that all the sorts of data that you can get to, because there's some interesting bits of information in there. So if we first look at the user info, yep. Right, so I just have a connect region. I haven't hooked it up to something that... So you have to have a control that recognises the grip. So once you have a Kinect scroll viewer on the screen, that's when the icon starts to change. So in the user info, we get to some interesting things. So we can get to what type of hand it is, the hand event, so you know if it's left, right, you know if they're gripped, you know if they're released, you know if they're if they're doing nothing. You know, it also tracks the pressed. So if you don't want to do grip, you want to do press. It tracks if it's the primary user or if it's the default user. And you can also get the raw X, Y, and Z. So if you want to do something with where their hand is in space as well, you can get all that information out of here as well. It sends all that through. And then if we go down into the hand. I need to have my hand up. And then for each hand, you get all this information as well. So you get the hand type, right, left, gripped, released. So you can cycle through that for the number of players that you have and get all the information, do what you want to do with it. So an example would be if you wanted to do something with two hands, if you wanted to make your own interaction with two hands, you could use this. If you want to do something with two players, you could hook in and work out to do something with the primary player versus something to do with the secondary player. Is there any other hands or something that anyone wants to look at? Do you want to see the, we can see the grip versus the grip release on the left hand, or?
Cool, so just
yep.
Continue, yeah?
Yep.
Sweet.
Yes.
Is there some kind of reactive framework type extension on this that allows you to get the whole thing as a series of event streams?
Event streams.
Yeah, like
okay, you sure? Okay. Yeah, so here we've got the grip and the grip release. The interesting thing as well is it will also tell you what the previous state of your hand was. So if you want to know, if you want to track that it was released, but you only want to do something about it when it was also gripped previously, there is a reference to the previous state of your hands. So if you flip between your hands and one was gripped and one wasn't gripped, and you want to only do it when two hands change. Yes?
Sorry, it might be a stupid question. I'm quite
new. No stupid questions.
You've got the hand there and it's recognising that.
Yep.
So if you're going to do a game where you're holding a plate and sort of moving your hand that way, or if you're moving your hand up and down, sort of inbuilt and baked in to take advantage of, or not?
Okay, so the question was, at the moment I'm doing this, he wants to know if he can make use of the same thing if he's got his hand straight out. So what you can do is you could use the interaction stream to track the X and the Y, and you should still get a primary user. I can probably check that John debugs it for me and puts that event on. You should still know if it's the primary hand. You'll just never get a gripped event because it doesn't work very well this way. But you could use it to track the X, Y. You can use it to track the Z as well, so if you need to do that sort of thing. But yeah, so basically the answer is yes. Okay, so there's two different ones. There's one which is the distance from the Kinect, and then there's one from distance of sort of like a zero point. And I believe that they're in meters. I will double check that now, make sure I don't make myself a liar. And then if I move to the side, I'm too far. Oh, right grip. Sorry, I'm left-handed. I always forget to use my right hand. If I get the 0 point for you. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is point of a meter. So it's like going from 0.2 to 0.7. Negative. Yeah. Any other? Yeah. How does it keep track? So with the depth frame and the skeleton frame, there's a concept of a tracking ID for a person. So it knows which person's which. So it'll map with that skeleton, that person has the same tracking ID for each event, and then if it flips to the other person, it'll have a different tracking ID. Was there someone else who had their hand? Yep.
So the primary and secondary person,
yep.
you've got to keep your hand up?
Yeah, so that's the basic way it tells who's in control. So with the skeleton, I don't know if anyone's played with the skeleton frame. With the skeleton frame, there's a couple of different settings you can do to work out who it's going to track. There's active player, so that's like who's moving around the most. There's closest player, so that's based on who's in front. But this one, it's sort of who gets their hand up first and who keeps it up. As soon as you drop it, it sort of defaults back and then you can reset it. So it allows you to hand off. So if I start playing and then I want John to come and play, I can put my hand down and still stand here and he can put his hand up and take over. So as long as you've got your hand up, it considers you the primary user. But again, if you want it to do something different, you could track the player by their ID or you could go back to using the skeleton frame. So here's an example of it. I'll just steal John for a second. We need another person for this.
Oh.
Can I get a volunteer,
quick
please?
Volunteer.
Quick volunteer.
Cheers. Thanks.
We're going to fit three of us. Just be really careful not to fall off the back. Okay, so by default, it can only see two. Yeah.
What is going on?
Sorry.
What is that?
Okay, so by default, it only tracks. Yep.
Okay, I'm back.
Better?
Step forward.
By default, it only tracks two players with a full skeleton. And at the moment, I've got it on the closest two players. So while I'm forward, it's tracking the two of us. And then if I step back, it picks the... You guys move forward.
There we go. Oh, that's the center of our mass.
That's the center mass for the other people.
That's where all my mass is.
And then there's most active, so if he's jumping around, he'll get picked up and it'll switch between two. So I'll just show that really quickly as well.
Oh, I'll do one more.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so... Ooh, has picked up two. Most... Should switch. Okay. It's not particularly reliable, though. Thank you. So if you want to get back to the raw skeleton frame, you can go and manipulate how you work out which is your most active player. Because obviously the problem is, especially in a big group, I don't know if anyone's found this, like there can be someone that's just standing there like this, and then there's someone looking at the screen. How do you work out who you want to make the person that's in control? So they've chosen sort of like the hand up, because with these controls, you're generally doing this or you're doing a push, so you have to have your hand up. And then the way it does the primary hand is it's the first hand that goes up, and as soon as you flip hands, it knows straight away, and it becomes the primary hand. So then if none of that is enough for you, you can go and build your own gestures and interactions. So the one I talked about this morning or earlier was doing the machine learning. There's other forms. There's things like teaching it based on asking someone to do something. So if anyone's played Connectimals, the one with the little tigers, they do this quite well. So they'll tell you to do something. So they'll say spin around. And then after it's seen you spin around, that's sort of how it detects it. It's like teaching the computer by getting you to do it, and then you'll do it the same way because it's you. And then the other one is to sort of do some sort of like what we would sort of consider poses. So you sort of like take, based on the skeleton stream generally, like, you know, if my hand goes out to here, you want something to go to the right. Again, this is where it's a little bit less accurate. But machine learning is definitely where you can get it to work for the wider audience. That's the one that is a lot harder and uses a lot more processing, but will give you the reward if you invest that time into it. So, who saw the keynote? Almost everyone. And you saw the Xbox Kinect demo? Yes. So, who's excited for the new Kinect? Yes, cool. So, Kinect they made an announcement for the Kinect for Xbox, and then pretty much the next day, the Kinect from Windows team announced that they will actually be taking that hardware to the next step as well, which is awesome news. And the really good thing is that everything that you learn now for the current Kinect is going to apply for the next Kinect. Learn now, it's only going to get better. And some of the really cool stuff that obviously we can look forward to is everything's going to be higher fidelity. So at the moment, the depth and the colour, like especially the depth, are quite small. All that stuff is going to be a lot better. They're going to have an expanded field of view. I'm not sure what they showed in the demo, but you can get a lot closer to the Kinect now, and you'll notice that it doesn't have the tilty thing anymore because it's much wider. It's going to be able to detect six full skeletons rather than just the two. And it's going to have more points. So you probably would have seen like the Boxman demo, and it can detect like hand movements and extra joints. And it's going to have this thing that they're calling active infrared, which sort of bounces signals off and measures the time for it to come back. And if you've seen some of the fusion sort of demos and the depth demos, that is so much more detailed now. You can really make out the structure of people's faces and like the buttons on their shirt and stuff like that. So my advice to you is don't wait for the new one. Start today, because that you're still going to need to know how to process a depth image. You're still going to need to know how to get to the skeleton. The only things is they could get better. They could give you some more controls. They could make a few things simpler, but the basics that you're going to learn aren't going to be wasted. A separate Kinect to the Xbox One. I don't think they've announced that yet. There's definitely going to be a Kinect for Windows device. I'm not sure if they've announced whether or not they're compatible between the two devices. So the new device, anyone apply for the accelerator program? No one. So they added an accelerator program so you can get a preview of the device. So some people will be getting access to them in November. But yeah, they haven't released whether or not they're going to be compatible between the two devices. So,
you might want to go back a step. Do people know there's a difference between Kinect and Xbox?
Oh yeah, do people know there's two different devices? No? Okay, so there's a Kinect for Windows. I didn't bring it either. There's a Kinect for Xbox device that at the moment you can plug in your machine and use with the Kinect SDK. You can use that for development. When you use it in, you can't use it in production. And then there's another one which is called the Kinect for Windows device, which looks exactly the same, except it says Kinect, and there's no Xbox 360 on it. So this is the retail device. There's a couple of differences between them. This device here, you can use the thing called near mode, which allows you to get a little bit closer. I'm not sure if people have seen this. So by default, once you get to about 80 centimeters on the original, yeah, turn that off. Yeah, you'll break it. Mm-hmm. Yep, so by default, it changes as I change depth. And then I get to about 80 centimeters, I disappear. And then if you turn the near mode on, I can actually get to about 40 centimeters before I disappear. So that's only available on the Kinect for Windows device. And that gives you the commercial license to be able to run it in a production environment as well. So they bake that into actually buying the device rather than having to purchase separate licenses. But yeah, if you want to do some development at the moment, I think you can buy like an Xbox with a Kinect for, I think it was like $100 the other day that we saw. $150 for the like Xbox with the Kinect. So for those who haven't downloaded it before, I can give you couple of really good places to go to start. So if you go to the Kinect for Windows home, so kinectforwindows.com, that there they have all the downloads for the SDK, they have a bunch of samples, and they have a forum that's really, really well looked after by the Microsoft staff. They have created their samples gallery now. They've put it into CodePlex, which is going to enable them to release extra samples, extra bug fixes for those samples out of cycle so you can get to them a lot quicker. So all the samples that you see there, you can get online separately, and they can release updates in between. So then I've got two different links here. So the first one is the gesture recognition, which is the video I talked about that Allison did at Build. If you're interested more in machine learning, go check that one out. And then there's a couple of other videos that they did at Build that show you some of the new features of the new Connect in that second link. And then if you want to see more detail of the code I showed today, I do have a blog post that a much more detailed blog post I did on it there. So before we finish up, does anyone have any questions? Yes. Yeah, so with the push, you can't really change what they've already done with it. But yeah, there is that problem where people are pushing sideways and sort of like pushing like this as well. They have done pretty well. As you reach up to the top, it does still work, and it does actually work when someone's kind of already had their hand sort of fully extended. They've optimized that as far as they can. If you're finding that it's not enough, then you then have to go back and sort of do that yourself. Yeah?
For people with like amputees, let's say someone's missing an arm, will they actually pick up that there's just one arm there?
Yeah, so I'll show you something. So the question was, what happens when someone is an amputee? Does it pick up their arm? So with each of the joints that the Connect can see, it has a concept of tracked and inferred. And if it can't see parts of your body, it has a guess where it is. So at the moment, you can see my hands. If I stick that hand behind it can only see half this arm. You can see that there's other dots there, but they're a different color. It's because it can't see my hand, and it's inferring where they are. So someone with like half an arm there, it would still infer that they had a hand, but it just doesn't know where it is for sure. So
the question was, what do I mean by machine learning?
There's a couple of different types of machine learning, but it's a way to essentially teach the machine or use an algorithm to determine a particular result. So this would be using different data and an algorithm to determine that someone is doing a grip. So they take different points, run it through some various algorithms to like determine that someone is doing a grip, and that is machine learning. Then there's other ones that are like neural networks that are based on yes, no's, and I'm not an expert on machine learning, but there are different algorithms that they use for it.
It's more about us using the device and understanding just better, not like putting that into the machine learning model.
So it's about taking a bunch of data,
a large
bunch of data, yes.
So maybe I can summarise this. So you take 100,000 different people of different ages, different ethnicities, and you get them in different ways to show a hand and a grip. So hundreds of thousands of different people doing a proper grip. And then you manually go and tag. So you get scientists, you know, to manually go and tag which ones are grips and which ones aren't. And you feed all of that raw data into a machine learning algorithm. And it actually kind of reverses the process. Like we'd normally solve conventional code by trying to figure out what the algorithm is to work out a grip. This actually kind of inverses that. It's like, we know what the outcome is. Here's 100,000 samples that say, yeah, that's a grip, that's not. Get the computer to come up with the algorithm based on all of those samples. So it's actually it's a whole different way of thinking.
It's like handwriting recognition.
Yeah, and like speech recognition and all the different types of recognition that computers can do. Does that sort of answer your question? Yeah. So the raw data comes to the SDK, and then it sort of does a bunch of processing and then gives it to you as that stream. So there is software that does it for you. But obviously you can extend that and write your own as well.
The machine learning part has already been done. It's not changing now once the device is
there. So the question was, the machine learning has already been done. Will they have to do that again? I'm not sure. They may have to run it through their same sets of data again because the fidelity will change. I would imagine, I'm not sure, that it would get a lot more accurate because you have a lot more pixels. Yeah, that's a really good question. Any other questions? Yep.
At the moment, how fast you can move your hand and Kinect doesn't detect it?
How fast do I have to move my hand before it doesn't detect it? Yeah, so the Kinect can capture you at 30 frames a second. So it won't lose you completely, but it may skip a frame. Like if I'm going like this, it may be jittery. It may pick me up every second frame or something. And that'll depend on how much. So the Kinect can go as fast as 30 frames a second. And you may get it slower depending on how long your USB cable is, how many things you've got running on your computer. But the fastest it can do, so it may get jittery, it may skip one if I get really, really quick with my hands. Yep.
What's going on with Kinect Fusion and what's the plans for that?
What's going on with Kinect Fusion and what are the plans? Does everyone know what Kinect Fusion is? No. Might just bring up the Fusion demo. So Kinect Fusion, what it does is it maps 3D space and can make really cool little. So a bit closer, yep. Yep. So if I stand still and John moves the Kinect around me, what it can do is it can create sort of like a 3D model in space. And my computers. And you can export that out to other like CAD programs and stuff like that and get like a 3D mesh. The things I know that are only sort of what's public, so it's gonna get a lot more high fidelity. But other than that, I'm not sure what extra stuff is gonna happen, but it's just gonna get a whole lot better. Are you using it for anything in particular? Okay, yeah, so there's a demo. You can take some meshes, you can export them out to other apps and stuff like that as well, if you want to get hold of it. A lot of people have been putting them through like 3D printers and stuff like that and get like. But yeah, as you scan it, it improves as well. So as you can see, it'll start filling in the keys on the keyboard. And if you go and look on that build video, I think they've got a good example of it. The new version, like, those keys are really, really, you can really make them out, and you can make out like buttons on shirts and stuff really, really well. I think these guys down here would know a lot more about Fusion than I do. Yeah. Any other questions? Well, yeah, one more.
Do you know what is the light sensitivity? So if it goes dark, it can still recognize movements.
Okay, so Kinect works really well in the dark because it has an infrared camera. It doesn't work so great in really broad daylight. Yeah, it doesn't work in daylight. And depending on the sort of light you have on you as well, it can affect the Kinect. And for the next version, I know they've improved its ability to work in different lighting situations, but I don't know what they are yet. But yeah, it works awesome in the dark because it uses infrared.
When you have a heater behind you.
Yeah, I haven't tried that one, actually. So I'd like to thank you guys a lot for coming out and seeing us today. Just want to get you to make sure you fill out your evaluations and stuff. Always welcome for feedback on our talks. And, you know, last time it was good to know that you like my shoes. Anything is always helpful. And if you have any other questions, I'm going to be around outside and in the exhibition hall and stuff for the rest of the afternoon. So thank you very much for coming and seeing us today.